Hi, welcome to Pete's Pub. I'm your host. Let me just start that one again. Hi, welcome to Pete's Pub. I'm your host, Pete Kemmerer. This is episode 10, release date Sunday, August 24th, 2025. Today, I have the pleasure of chatting with the well-traveled Jessica Lawrence, the owner of PlanForSpain.com, where she leverages her extensive knowledge of Spain and other destinations for those who are looking for deep dive fulfilling visits or even full-blown relocations. Without getting too political here, there is a very healthy interest lately in potential relocations from America to other destinations. And Jessica has the tools to help you navigate the waters for a successful outcome. Jessica, welcome to Pete's Pub.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks for having me.
It's great having you here. Where are you from, Jessica?
I was born and raised in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Terrific. I was not born there, but I was raised there as well. And it turns out, I just found out today, that you graduated from the same high school I did.
I did. I am a Deer Husky, class of 1996. I lived in Allentown till I was about 21. So I haven't lived there in quite a while, other than the occasional visits, staying there, you know, between my moves between different places. But yeah, that's my hometown, Allentown.
Yeah, I'm a Lewis E. Dariff High School class of 1979. Oh God, what happened? And then junior high school, which is what they called middle school back then, I guess. I went to school with your uncle, Uncle Bob Berner, who introduced me to you. He's a fan of the podcast. He's been very gracious to me. He's offered feedback, and he's kind of like he's an interesting guy. He's kind of like my own personal Nick Offerman.
I'm not sure who Nick is.
Nick Offerman is a rugged, intelligent man who offers wisdom and excellent wood cutting abilities.
He's definitely my uncle. He'll always be Uncle Robbie to me. And he's definitely a talented man with the woodworking.
Yeah, he is. He is. Yeah. Robbie, huh?
Yes. The whole family.
Start calling him Robbie.
He's Robbie.
I was at his place a little while back. We had a little bourbon tasting between the two of us, and it was a lot of fun with him and another friend of ours. And it's been way too long. We got to do that again. I enjoy spending time with your uncle. He's a good guy, and he's fun to talk with.
Definitely.
When did traveling become such an important part of your life?
Well, I would say it started, you know, we took family vacations once a year as a child, but we were always staying in the United States. We did go to Canada once. But I, at one time in a prior life, I was married to somebody in the U.S. Navy. And so I was living in Norfolk, Virginia. That's where I moved to when I left Allentown at around 21, 22 years old. And this ex-husband of mine got orders to go to Spain. Well, we kind of chose, you know, to go to Spain. So this town called Rota, R-O-T-A, there's a military base there. And I lived there for 3 years. And that was my first time leaving the North American continent.
Now, when you first went there, did you speak Spanish?
I didn't. I had studied French in middle school. I went to South Mountain Middle School. I took French through middle school and high school at Dariff, and I knew only basic words in Spanish that a lot of Americans know, like fiesta or gracias or cerveza, things like that. But I did not speak Spanish at all.
I see. So how long did you stay in Spain at that point?
So at that time, I was in Spain for 3 years. That was like the length of his military assignment there. And while I was there, I took Spanish classes through the University of Maryland on the base with a local Spanish professor. So I took like 12 college credits, Spanish 1, 2, 3, 4. I was studying in a formal way. So I was, you know, I'm not one of those people who can just learn from talking to people on the street. I need to see the structure of everything. I need to know the rules. I need to visualize things. You know, someone tells me a word and I just repeat it, I might not remember it. So I had, you know, homework and things like that. So I was studying in a formal way. And over the 3 years, you know, that I was there, I took the four classes, the 12 credits. So it was more on the front end though. So I think I had a break somewhere in the middle. This is 2005. I know that I definitely got the 12 credits of that. And it really, my professor was fantastic. I give her so much credit. I don't think it would have been the same without her.
So by the time you were finished with your Spanish lessons, you were fluent in the language?
Yeah, fluent enough. I wanted to learn Spanish to make my life easier while living in Spain. I didn't want to be confined to the base and only shopping in the stores on the base. You know, I wanted to leave the base and go shopping in local supermarkets, eat at local restaurants, travel.
English isn't prevalent in those places?
It's not. It's really not. Okay. I mean, I would say, you know, Spain is a little tough with English. It's not like when you go to Netherlands or Germany or Sweden. I mean, you so commonly find people that speak English. But in Spain, for many years, it really wasn't pushed. I think a lot of it had to do with the Franco era, where everything was very nationalized. And the Spanish people here, it's not that they don't study English. They're starting to now from earlier ages, but all the movies are dubbed. Everything's dubbed in Spanish. Whereas if you take like other countries like Romania or Portugal, they don't dub their movies. They leave it in the original language and put the subtitles in Portuguese or Romanian. So they're exposed to this, and English is a lot more widely spoken in those places. So where the base was also like a small town area. It wasn't Madrid or Barcelona. So in big cities like that, you'll have some more prevalence of Spanish people that speak English, but you really can't count on, oh, English is the universal language, because it really isn't, you know, for everybody.
Not for everybody, no. And it's interesting, too. I think subtitles in general in television and film are a big thing these days all over the world. Even here, I mean, I watch Korean soap operas, you know, on Netflix, and they're all subtitled in English, but they leave the language alone. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that in a way, because although it takes a little bit getting used to looking at the bottom of the screen, you get the actual inflection of the actors, you know, voices and how they're delivering the lines. And it adds, you know, a lot to the shows.
It's so much better.
The native language that it was produced in.
And I also think it's kind of distracting when you have a mouth that's not moving in the audio that you're hearing.
Exactly.
So, if it's a language I don't speak, like German, I'd rather hear the German, read the English subtitles. In fact, I don't know how it was in Spain the first time I was here with the movies. I only went to a movie once back then, and it was dubbed. But my second stint in Spain, which we'll eventually get into, they have, if you're in like a big enough town, the movie theaters have VOSE, which is Versión Original Subtitulada en Español. So you can watch the movie in English in its natural form, if it's an English-speaking movie. Sure. And then they put the Spanish subtitles at the bottom. So this is for locals who, they also want to hear the people's original voices. Even though they might not understand what they're saying, they can at least read the Spanish subtitles. And so then for the foreigners that live there, like Americans or Brits or whatever, they love the VOSE because we don't have to sit through a dubbed movie.
Right. So after your first 3 years were up, where did you go next?
So we left Spain in 2008, and he got stationed back in Virginia again in the Norfolk, like Hampton Roads area. So I was in Virginia the first time about, I think, 3 years, 3 or 4 years, went to Spain for 3 years, and then came back to Virginia again. I was only there for about a year when we ended up getting divorced. We'll make a long story short. I ended up getting divorced, and I moved back to Pennsylvania at that time. Okay. So then now we're in like 2009. I did another brief stint in Lehigh Valley, living with my parents in the basement. basement. I felt awful. I was so sad, you know, going through the divorce and like, oh gosh, now I live in my parents' basement. Luckily, that only lasted for 3 months, and I was able to get an amazing job in Lansdale at a company called SKF. and I was able to move to Lansdale, which is like an hour, 45 minutes from Allendale.
Sure.
And I was in Lansdale for many years.
Okay, what did you do in Lansdale at
So
SKF?
at SKF, I started in customer service, like in a call center working with the industrial aftermarket distributors. I moved on to various roles. I've worked in like six different roles within the company, from logistics to master data to process management, going back to customer service again, working with original equipment manufacturers. It was fantastic. It was a fantastic company, and I actually worked there until July of 2024, and I was corporate downsized,
Oh
and
wow.
very
So you were
devastating to
there quite a
me.
long time.
Over 14 years.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
I know SKF they were a supplier and customer to me in various iterations of my life. I'm a quality assurance and information technology guy. So I ended up getting involved with them for a variety of different businesses.
A lot of people don't know what a bearing is, so it's nice
Right.
that you have heard of SKF. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not a trivial thing how to make a bearing properly and to make a, millions of them properly and so they don't break and, it's a high quality product and SKF was that is still really one of the top bearing manufacturers in the entire world.
Yes.
Sorry about the corporate downsizing, but
Yeah.
that left you with a decision to make. What are you going to do next?
Right.
So what did
So
Jessica do next?
it's probably best if I back up the story a little bit, because
Sure.
when I got corporate downsized last July, definitely was traumatic for me. I would have never left that company. I was so happy there, and I had such a good reputation with everybody. But corporations, it's a numbers game. So
Yeah, I
when you
know.
work there for a number of years and you're have a higher salary, you're more of a target. So I had actually been living in Spain before I got downsized. So we had the pandemic in 2020. I think everyone's going to remember that year. At some point, well before that, I had met my husband in North Wales, and we got married. This was back in 2012. I meet him. I'm living in Lansdale. He was living in Perkasie in Bucks County, and we met at a bar one night in North Wales. Very serendipitous. And he has two sons. They were 9 and 11 when I met him, and we ended up getting married in 2014, and we were living in Lansdale, up until actually 2021. He was working in Malvern for Siemens Healthcare, then it became Cerner, and I was working at SKF. So the pandemic happened, and remote work was in full swing. And we had always talked about, he at some point wanted to live abroad in his life and have that experience, even before he met me. And back in 2017, we had gone to Spain on vacation together. It was his first time going to Spain. And he finally got to experience firsthand what I was going on and on about for all these years, about how much I love Spain and how my dream is to live there again someday. And he got to experience, the scenery and the ambiance. That we were there in the summertime, the beaches, everything's just such a great, the skies are blue, the sun's almost always shining in the summertime. It's really hard to describe sometimes. You have to just kind of feel it for yourself.
Can we
So,
take a pause right here? Is
yeah, of course.
people should go to your website, planforspain.com. You have some pictures in your gallery there that adequately describe exactly what you're telling me about. Spain's beauty is marvelous. It's just incredible to see. It's almost like every direction you look, there's something amazing to see. I mean, the architecture, the beach, the weather, like you said, in the summertime, you have even like the street merchants, all the stuff that goes on there. It rivals, a lot of people talk about Greece and Italy. Well, it rivals Greece and Italy. I mean, it's that kind of beauty, that Mediterranean beauty, and Portugal, you know, places
it sure
like
does.
That, that whole area. And
I think out of all those places, the Spanish people are the best. I mean, Portugal, they're also very nice as well. But, you know, the Spanish people are typically very kind people, you know, very like lively. They have so many celebrations here. I mean, there's so much history.
So how hard did you have to twist your husband's arm to move to Spain?
Really not hard at all. His stipulation was that he wanted to wait until both of his boys were done with high school and off to college.
That's
or
fair.
Doing whatever they're doing. So
sure.
2021 was the graduation year of his younger son. And it just was a coincidence that we were in the middle of a pandemic. So in 2020, I think it was like early in the pandemic, we're confined in the house a lot. And we start putting a plan together in writing on a PowerPoint of how we could make this happen. Because I had started doing some research and found out about a visa that Spain offered that could work for us. So we put down this plan together in writing, but it was still 2020. We couldn't really do it yet, but it was good to actually, you know, get it down on paper. Virtual paper. So,
sure.
You know, we actually started then in the beginning of 2021, it was the time to put the process in place. So he was ready to go. He decided that he was going to take a sabbatical from work. Well, that's a nice way of saying I'm going to quit my job. Cause in the US there's really not like sabbaticals like they have in Europe. Maybe
right.
You could get a month or 3 months, but you can't get like a year away from your job unless maybe you're a teacher or something. So he ultimately resigned from his job, and I was going to do the same. I was prepared to do that. That's just how badly I wanted to live my dreams. But I really didn't want to leave SKF. We were able to come to an agreement, making a long story short, that I was going to still be able to work remotely for them. A little bit of a gray area. I was still on paper, like in Pennsylvania, like pretending I was in PA. They were just more or less looking the other way. I don't hopefully no one reports them to the IRS or whatever. It's not a big deal. So we work on, you know, getting out of our leased car. You know, we still had time on the lease. We used a website. I think it was called Swap a Lease. We worked on getting rid of so many belongings that we had, consulted with a real estate agent to sell the condo that we owned in Lansdale, you know, taking all the steps that we needed to, researching the documentation we needed to put together for the visa, you know, that we'd have to go travel to the New York City Spanish consulate, you know, preparing all those documents. And so we worked on that. We ended up, it was like May when we put the house on the market. It was a crazy time for real estate because, you know, everyone was putting in offers on houses. So in like, I don't know, 3 days, it was like over a weekend and we had, I don't know, 10 offers or something, you know, something like that. It was a condo. So it was an appropriate home only for certain people. It couldn't be for like a big family.
Mm-hmm.
Got a great offer on the house. And we sold it. And then we went and stayed in the Lehigh Valley at my parents' house.
In the basement?
Yes, the same basement.
Oh,
luckily they had built a bathroom for me back then. So it's a nice finished basement. We had our own space. So they're in Center Valley now, like 5 minutes from Allentown. So we stayed there. There was a lot going on. You know, we also have cats. We had cats. We still have cats. So we were moving our pets with us every step of the way. And we had to work on, you know, getting our marriage license. It's called apostille. It's like an international notary symbol, seal that's saying it's authenticating a document. We had to get a police background check for Spain. There was something I was waiting for from Pennsylvania. Oh, the police background check was able to come from the state. So we were able to send it to be apostilled through the Pennsylvania Secretary of State in Harrisburg. But it was COVID at that time. Everything was slow. Like you couldn't even go in person. We had to at one point reach out to our congressional representative to help move it along. And thank God we did, because I think that was key. So I don't want to bore you with too many details, and I feel free to ask if you have another question, but we ended up getting our visa approved in August. We did a day trip. Actually, we went overnight to New York City just to not have to go early in the morning and worry about traffic or anything like that. We had our appointment at the consulate, delivered all the paperwork that they requested. And then we went back to Pennsylvania, and about 2 weeks later, they approved our visa.
And, I don't think the details are boring at all, because this is kind of what you do. I mean, you help guide people through, you've been through it, and you can help guide people through this with much less effort on their part, because you already say, okay, you already know you need this, 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 and this. Here's how you get all of these things. Here's where we go with all these things. This is who requires all these things. You know, so
it's a lot of logistics.
It's interesting. It's not the simplest process in the world.
No, and for some people, it could be completely overwhelming and just make them throw up their hands and say, "I can't do this." Or some people do opt to pay an immigration attorney or a relocation agent to help them with the process. So
it can get very expensive. And also, there's probably, I'm going to guess, there's different requirements for different things that you want to do in, say, Spain. If you want to retire there, do you want to work there?
Yeah.
They
have various different visas that they offer. And, you know, depending on what your situation is, they've also created a new visa that they didn't have in 2021 when we applied. So we got what is called the non-lucrative visa in Spain, and we had to show that we had a certain amount of money in the bank. It can either be a lump sum or it can be passive income. We really weren't supposed to be working there. Or at least we couldn't work in Spain. We couldn't work for a Spanish company on a Spanish payroll. We weren't supposed to be doing work under the table, but my husband wasn't working, but I was still working at my job. Then later Spain created this digital nomad visa, which is kind of complex. We might be switching to that next year. Actually, it makes me a little nervous, which is a lot, because I've done all this stuff myself, you know, for me and my husband. So far, we never paid a professional to do these things. Right. We were always able to figure it out and navigate through all the bureaucracy. So we were on this non-lucrative visa, and this is what is perfect for retired people. Truly retired people is really the best scenario. Or if you are a millionaire and you don't have to, you know, you're retired, of course, but you could be 35 and be a millionaire. Not in our case, but we did have enough to meet the financial requirements. They spell it all out as to, you know, depending on how many people are in your family and how much money you need to have. So we did that, and I forget where I was going with that, but yeah, so that's what we have. We're still actually on that visa, but we're hoping that we can come up with a better plan next year when the current one expires.
Okay. Is there a lot of diversity in Spain?
I would say not as much as in other places. I would say it's more diverse than it was. Let me say that over again.
Sure.
It's more diverse now than it was when I was here the first time. So when I was here the first time in Rota at the military base, of course, there was a large amount of Americans there. So that brought some diversity. But there are, I mean, Spain's population has grown over the years. I don't have the exact numbers in my head, but a large part of their population growth is due to immigration. It's not from their birth rate. Their birth rate is low, just like in the U.S. It might even be lower than the U.S. So they're also having like a similar thing regarding the birth rate, like in the U.S. So there's, Spain has legal migration like us. Spain also has illegal migration, where you have people from Africa coming in on boats, or, you know, that's mostly how it is. They come in on a boat. There's also a lot of immigrants in Spain from Latin America who you know, they typically, I think, go to Spain like in a legal way. They actually have an easier path than me because of the history of Spain and former colonies. So, like, for example, if you are, and this maybe could be helpful for a listener, if you have a passport from Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, you know, places, anything that used to be a former colony, even the Philippines, if you can find some type of residency visa to get to Spain, such as a non-lucrative visa, digital nomad visa, things like that, you can actually then, after 2 years being in Spain on a residency, you can apply for Spanish citizenship only after 2 years. Whereas my husband and I, it would take like 10 years. And it would have to be not extended absences either. So, yeah, Spain also had a recent, and I think it's closing later this year, but they had the window open for people to get a Spanish nationality if their grandparents were born in Spain and then left. So if you had a Spanish grandparent or a Spanish parent who at some point emigrated and went to US or somewhere else in Latin America, they had this ley de, I think it was ley de nietos, which is like the grandparents, grandchildren law. It was also ley de la memoria. It had, you know, kind of like making right things for all the people who fled like during Franco. So they want to remember. Memoria is like memory, remembering. So they want to try to bring some of these people back and their descendants back. In Spain, I think they have it right when it comes to immigrants. They realize the need for the immigrants and it's helping them grow their population. So you could be living in the US and have maybe a Mexican passport, but your grandparents were from Spain. If you can get their, you know, prove their lineage, get their birth certificate, you can also then yourself apply for Spanish citizenship from the US. I actually know somebody who did this. My former, one of my former managers, actually, his wife, he and his wife are Mexican, living in the US many years, also became US citizens. And his wife was able to, had this closer lineage to Spain through her grandparents. And she was able to get all the paperwork together, work through the consulate of Spain in New York City, and, you know, now has her Spanish nationality, her Spanish passport, her citizenship, without ever even living in Spain. So
that's interesting. my grandfather on my mother's side, I mean, my grandfather on my mother's side, meaning my mother's father.
Okay.
His name was Baldomero Marino.
Oh,
and
that
he's
kind of
from
Spanish.
Spain.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you can get the, you're running out of time, but maybe if you want to look into it, you know, it's, that's something that you would probably want to hire a lawyer to help you navigate.
Yeah. Well, I would have to, because all I have is his, I have an obituary, which is how I know where he came from. And I may even have a death certificate for him. In fact, I think I do, but I don't have his birth certificate.
But it can be found.
That would be difficult. Yeah,
I don't think so. People are doing it somehow.
I that would have to come from some help within Spain.
Within
obviously.
Spain, of course, yes.
But so it was interesting how he, you know, he was from Madrid.
Okay, and, that was my question.
My grandmother was from the Ukraine.
Okay, so this again was your mother's father.
My mother's father, who he died when he was in his 40s. He had a massive stroke or something in the backyard. And then my mother's mother was from the Ukraine. And
so your Spanish grandfather had come to the U.S. at some point, and that's where he died?
Yes. 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 He was.
Plus, your mom's half Spanish.
Eva. he married Eva Romanijan, he came to Palmerton, Pennsylvania. You know where Palmerton is, probably.
Yes. Yes, I have an aunt that lives there.
There you go. And that's where I was actually born in Lehighton, and I lived my first couple of years in Palmerton.
Okay.
And my mom's father died when she was just a young girl. So,
Okay. So she never had the chance to learn the language from her father or anything like
No,
that.
no. I ended up learning Spanish a little bit. I took Spanish when I went to Moser School in Allentown. We were taught Spanish starting in fourth grade. But to be honest with you, I had, well, let me see, 5 years of Spanish. I remember very little of it because I didn't use it.
Yeah, if you don't use it, you lose
Yeah.
it.
Then I took French in high school, forgot all that too. And, so that's interesting.
Oh, that's really cool, man. If I were you, well,
Yeah.
no, you have a lot
I
to,
hear you.
you're very rooted in the US, it seems. I know you have some grandchildren. But you
Yes.
never know, just as an option, keep it
Sure.
in mind.
And one thing I've told, my kids don't have that option, but I've always told my kids to keep an open mind. I mean, don't just don't forget, don't give up your critical thinking skills. Take a look at the world as it is, not as they've taught you it might be. Make your own decisions and keep an open mind as to where you live your life and where you can pursue happiness.
But if you
And
could
it
achieve your Spanish nationality through your grandfather, then your kids will also be able to get the nationality as well.
Well, look at that.
Yes.
So what kind of opportunities are there in Spain for people of, say, your age? Because I'm way older
Well,
than you.
Spain is notorious for being a hard place for a non-European Union citizen to find a job. I wouldn't really say it's the land of opportunity.
Okay.
The US is at least is or was seen more of the land of opportunity.
Right.
My husband and I.
even with multinational corporations having offices there, that say, like for instance, you were working. Oh, I just hit my desk. Say for instance, you were working for SKF. Okay. But you were formerly through Pennsylvania, yet you were in Spain and you were performing remote operations. That was something that you were able to do. Are there more opportunities like that available these days?
I mean, my former employer does have an office in Madrid. I really, if I should have been working out of that office. But that would have meant the company's actually taking steps to help me, to do it. This whole me moving to Spain thing was all my doing and choosing. So, in fact, I didn't even know about that route. There is a such visa that Spain offers called like an intra-company transfer. So, if you are in a situation where you work for a multinational in the US and they have an office in Spain, definitely look into that and see. But they will have to, the companies will have to like file paperwork on your behalf, and ultimately you'll be getting a visa that allows you to work in Spain for that company. So, regarding opportunities, Spain is a little bit notorious for being not so friendly to self-employed people. I mean, it's doable. The taxes are higher. But we also have to keep in mind that paying higher taxes is not always a bad thing. You do get a lot here in Spain for what you pay. So for example, this is something that hopefully next year my husband can become like a self-employed person in Spain with what he does with his career coaching. For example, and this is just like a rough estimate, but I think the first 2 years you get a little bit of a discount, but then by the third year you have to pay your 300 euros a month to like Spain's Social Security. Even if you're only making 1,000 euros a month, they don't care. You have to pay that. Now, granted, you're getting your healthcare for that. You're contributing into their system. You still have to work.
And how is the healthcare in Spain?
So my husband and I have private healthcare here in Spain. It's a requirement of our visa. So we have this non-lucrative visa. We're not authorized to work here. The idea is they don't want you becoming a drain on their society. So when we did our initial visa in New York, we had to show proof of a plan, a private health insurance plan with a Spanish company, or at least a company that has a presence in Spain. I know of Cigna, but we have a Spanish company. It's one that you would have never heard of. I think it's great. It's quite affordable. For this coming renewal that we have to pay for my husband and I, it's a total of 1,500 euros for the entire year. Maybe the dollar has gone down terribly in the past 6 months, but let's just say 1500 euros maybe is now about $1800. But I mean, if you're thinking about how expensive health insurance is in the US, I mean,
oh yeah,
1500 euros, $1800 is like a
it's
dream.
Nothing.
And
right.
We don't have any copays, no deductibles, no waiting period. We have to have this like platinum plan. It's not called a platinum plan, but you can consider it something like that. We have to have this as the terms of for the terms of our visa. So I've used it several times. I haven't used it yet this time, but in 2021, when we moved to Malaga, and that's where we were for 2 years and 8 months before going back to the US in May of last year. During those 2 years and 8 months, I had like probably 3 MRIs, a couple ultrasounds, you know, mammogram. I even went to physical therapy for my shoulder. I've like a long-term tendonitis or something going on. So my MRIs were like my shoulder and my knees. It never cost me anything. So, even when I went to physical therapy, I must've gone 2 or 3 times a week for like, I don't know, 6, 10 weeks, something like that. It felt like forever when I was doing it and I was kind of getting tired of it. But as long as I had the authorization from my insurance company, you know, they would give me like in groups. So maybe this authorization gave me, I don't know, 10 or 15 appointments or, you know, or visits to the physical therapy. And then when those ran out, then I had to just go back and get another authorization, but it was never difficult or anything like that. There were doctors that did speak English to some level, but I always went into every appointment expecting that they weren't going to speak English.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
I mean, 1200 euros is, I mean,
1500.
You have out of pocket expenses here, you know, on most people's plans that are, you know, 5, 6, 8 times that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just your out of pocket. And then you have maximums and of course, I don't know how it is over there, but just finding a doctor and finding availability can be difficult here in the U.S. in some places. And especially now with the cuts to Medicaid, a lot of rural hospitals are closing.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors are just fleeing the system here in the United States. I know that even in the veterans hospitals right now, they're refusing to work. They don't want to work at veterans hospitals anymore because it's just not a career path that they want to continue with the current environment. So
it's really just, scary, actually.
It
you
is.
Know, we,
it's going to kill people. In fact, I'm sure it is killing people at this point, and we're just not hearing a whole lot about it right now. I'm very discouraged by the whole thing. That's one of the reasons I asked how things were in Spain.
So I wanted to say, I was talking about what my experience was always with the private healthcare system. Spain has a rather great public system. Now, of course, you're always going to find the people that complain about it. I don't have any experience with the public system here. We don't pay into it, so I can't use it. But, you know, God forbid I had an emergency and the only hospital around was a public one. Obviously, they'd have to take me there and they could stabilize me. And then my guess is maybe they would move me to a private facility. But it, you know, it wouldn't cost an arm and a leg. I mean, I've heard stories of people like, this was a while ago, but someone's kid broke their arm. They had to go to the emergency room in Spain, and it was maybe, I don't know, a few hundred euros or something like that to get the kid stabilized. So, you know, the public system here, I mean, like everything, it has its flaws that I've heard about from friends reading news articles, but they still have it, and it's something. And the reason their public system exists, the reason private healthcare is very affordable here is because their public system exists. So, you know, there are a lot of Spanish people who do subscribe to a private plan as like a supplement in addition to what they have publicly, because maybe they don't want to wait, you know, or they, you know, their job, some jobs offer as well employees, like a private plan is like a benefit, but it's not in the same way we think of benefits in the US as all the healthcare. I mean, they have their base system.
But at the end of the day, no one is declaring bankruptcy because they got cancer.
That's
no
correct.
One's being left behind. No one's being left alone just to die. Mm. And it's the civilized thing to do. And
yeah.
I'm very discouraged that the United States is still not seeing that and hasn't seen that yet, that we need to step up our game here. So you mentioned that you were there for 2 years and 10 months or so, and then you moved back to the States for a bit.
Yes.
Did you experience any culture shock coming back after spending all that time over there?
We definitely did. So we were in Malaga for those 2 years and 8 months. We really were happy there and liked it and didn't really want to come back to the US. Our brains were telling us that we should come back. I was thinking, okay, my employer, how long are they going to let me do this? Probably not too much longer. My husband wanted to get back into like a full-time job, corporate, you know, type of situation. We were thinking about our future, our retirement, you know, growing our 401ks and all those responsible things and the societal pressure that you feel, you know, that you should be doing these things. So we went back and we moved to Arizona. We moved to Phoenix. That was a place that we had gone on vacation during the pandemic. And I just really loved Arizona. And I thought that I felt like I could see myself living there someday. So we go to Phoenix. But whether it was going to be Phoenix or Eastern Pennsylvania, I mean, still the same things with the reverse culture shock. So, you know, Phoenix is a pretty big city. It's not like a dense city like Philadelphia, but it's big and it's sprawling and it's spread out. And they do have public transport there. But we thought we took public transport all the time in Malaga. The buses in the metro were just fantastic, clean, affordable, safe. In Phoenix, every time we would, you know, leave our house, there was these bus stops that were nearby, and you saw more often than not homeless people and drug zombies around all the bus stops. It made you feel like, okay, this is something I don't even want to take part in. It's not worth it. And also, like, the timetables, you know, aren't as good. So that's one thing I can think of. You know, in Spain, this is another silly thing, but it's true. In Spain, there's a lot of roundabouts, you know, or rotaries, maybe they call them in New Jersey. You know what a roundabout is, right?
Sure.
So there's not many instances in Spain where you have to make a left and cross over traffic. They usually have a roundabout for that or a light. So in Phoenix, we lived off of a pretty busy road. We were in a townhouse development, a gated townhouse development, but it was still like off this main road. And it was, I think, three lanes in each direction, very busy road. And every time we wanted to go and make a left, it just felt kind of like barbaric to you're just like every man for himself, you know, just hope that you can get past the cars. And it had a little area where you could kind of go to the middle and wait. If you crossed over the one direction, you could wait, go to the other. But I mean, there were so many accidents. Then also for, you know, going, when we went back to the US and getting back into the healthcare, I felt like everything was kind of like a little bit fragmented. I was so used to in Spain, like going to this one app of like a private health, private hospital company they have there, and saying, okay, I have this insurance and I need a dermatologist. So I just felt like it wasn't that straightforward in when we went back to the US. I had, you know, insurance with SKF because I was still working there for some time. But, and you could, of course, go into like United Healthcare's or whatever, I forget what company they had, but you could go in and see who their provider or who was in their network. But then to make an appointment with that doctor in the network, it's like, oh, I have to call. I guess I have to just call and to get the appointment. Whereas, you know, with the hospital that I always went to in Spain that had, well, they had a hospital, but they had all the other specialties there as well. I could just do it on the app. I can't think of any others at the moment, but those are definitely three that, I know another one. In Spain, there's almost always a safe place to cross the street. So whether you're in a big city or a smaller town, they have these like zebra crossings where you have like big, thick white lines on the ground And it's a real serious rule that the cars have to stop for the pedestrians. I mean, I guess in the US, theoretically, it's the same as well. They're supposed to. But I mean,
They
how
call
safe
them
do you.
targets here, not thick safe zones.
Right. So, how, I
They're
mean, so when you're
targets. It's,
crossing the
hey,
street in the US.
this is where you score points by hitting the people.
Right. So you don't feel safe sometimes, right?
Right.
So in Spain, there's always, even, I mean, I can think about certain places in the US that you would think, oh, this looks too highway. This doesn't really look like an area that people should be walking. I'm not talking about like safety as far as like robberies or muggings and things like that, but just like the roads, like the infrastructure of the roads. Where in Spain, you would, where we lived in Malaga, I'm thinking of a certain spot, and it was close to like a highway and some on-ramps, but there was always a sidewalk, and there's always a safe place to walk and a safe place to cross the street, even as you're going like under the overpass. So it's kind of really geared more with pedestrians in mind. And so going back to the US, everything is so car-centric. I mean, if you don't have a car, your life is pretty tough in the US. So
In most places, yeah. I mean, I was recently in Boston, and that's a city you can definitely get along in without a car. In fact, I would recommend not having one. Their transit system, ever since they did the big dig up there, is just tremendous, and it's a real testament to the amount of pain everyone went through to get all those transit systems in place. But you really don't need a car in Boston, which is amazing. Do you get any snow where you're at in Spain in the winter?
No, so where I lived in Malaga and where I am now, it doesn't snow here, but I'm not far from certain mountains, like the one in, there's a couple places in the Malaga province that have a really high altitude, and they do get some snow, but it's still not like a nor'easter, like blizzard, like what we are used to being from PA.
I'll send you pictures of our next one.
Oh no. But they also nearby, we have the famous Sierra Nevada mountain range in the Granada province of Spain, which they have a famous ski resort there. And I don't remember what the elevation is. I'm not good with those numbers, but it's pretty high. And it's one of those places where people like to joke. They say, well, if it's March and you're in Granada, you can go skiing and then drive an hour and then you can be down at the beach. So the big difference is in elevation. So yeah, Malaga winter, and where I am now, which is an hour from Malaga, it's going to be colder here than in Malaga, but it's not like a Pennsylvania winter.
So, you run planforspain.com. What are people can go to your website then, and I'll absolutely include a link in the show notes for the site, but what are some of the major things that you do to help people save money and stress in relocating to, say, Spain?
So I'm very new at all this as far as being able to help somebody do it. But in my case, I have that firsthand experience to help somebody prepare, right? How to get started. Some people don't even know how to get started, So even something simple that doesn't even have to do with immigration and going to a consulate, but like, I have so much stuff. What am I going to do with all my stuff? That's a lot of planning that goes into it. I have my firsthand experience of me navigating all the bureaucracy myself, with the immigration process. I didn't pay anybody to do this for us. Going to the consulate in New York and Spain and getting approved for your visa is just one part of the process. Then when you get to Spain, you have a whole part two of the process that you have to do. You have to take that visa and then turn it into a residency card. So, it's not just like, oh, move to Spain and you can start living your life. You really have to navigate through more bureaucracy. And I don't say that to scare people because to me, it's not scary. It's if you can follow rules and instructions and be organized, it's actually pretty easy. So, there's people who d pay others to do some simple tasks, like just like getting an appointment through the immigration website. So, for example, when we came here, one of the things we had to do was eventually like take the visa in our passport and turn it into a residency card. You need to make an appointment for that. You can't just roll up to the police station and just do it. Everything has to have an appointment. Spain runs on appointments. So, getting appointments, just knowing how to navigate the websites to get the appointments. There's people that just glaze over and they don't want to do that stuff. for me, I was able to navigate all of it. You know, we've gone through the experience of purchasing a used car in Spain now two times. That we did help. We did pay for like a service to do the paperwork for us. It's kind of, they call it a gestor, gestoria. It's, think of like how maybe it's like an auto tag place where you just, you don't actually have to go to PennDOT or whatever state you live in, it's Department of Transportation or DMV, and do that. You can pay this person who has access to all those things and they do it for you really quickly. And you don't need to go make an appointment at the DMV. You know, it's hard to find a rental sometimes in Spain. If you don't have a Spanish job and Spanish income, if you're a foreigner, and even if you have enough cash to pay all 12 months up front, sometimes that's still not good enough for people. There's a squatting problem in Spain. I don't know if you've heard about that, but I wouldn't say it's exaggerated, but it's also not something that you should be afraid of either. I'm now a homeowner in Spain, so we have also navigated buying a home in Spain on this. This is my third time in Spain. It's my husband's second time. For example, when I was looking for like a real estate lawyer to review it, we won't get into real estate realtors in Spain. It doesn't work like realtors in the US. Really what you need is a good person who knows what they're doing. It could be a lawyer, but it doesn't even have to be a lawyer. It could be a gestor. I ended up working with a lawyer that's local to this town that we live in. She only speaks Spanish. I had gotten a quote from another firm that is like on the coast, and they quoted me a price, and it's like the foreigner pricing. I mean, they charge like a percentage of the purchase, like a base fee and a percentage of the purchase price, whatever was like lower or was a higher. I forget how it went, but that say it would have been like 2,400 euros. Because I can speak Spanish, I worked with a local lawyer in this town and I spent 500 euros and right. She reviewed all the paperwork. So I, you know, because I have this experience living here and navigating life in Spain, I know more about how things work. You know, so having that firsthand experience or someone to just like guide you through the process and not always necessarily doing it for you, but sometimes you just need someone to help you get started. You know, what website do I go to do this?
Do you and your husband plan to stay in Spain this time around, or is the world going to call you to spend time elsewhere?
Well, I really wish I could say that Spain is my forever home. The world's just too unpredictable. We're not from here. We're still dealing with immigration. We do still need to find a path forward next year when our current residency card expires. You know, my husband has two sons. They're doing great. They're 22 and 24, but maybe someday they'll have kids and my husband will have grandkids and he'll want to go back to the US or find some way to split our time there. I don't know. I feel like I can't predict with certainty anything anymore because the world is just so unpredictable. So for now, we are here. We're happy to be back. We are, you know, really happy with our cute little house that we bought. We bought a row house, in a Spanish pueblo. It's like a small town. It's an hour from the coast. So if you're willing to go an hour inland, you can find some pretty good real estate prices compared to what things cost in Malaga or Madrid, Barcelona. Well, Madrid is inland, but we bought a house for 55,000 euros. And, you know, with converting to dollars and all the fees, the closing costs and the taxes and everything associated with buying this house, it's going to be around in US dollars, $71,000.
Wow.
You just can't find that in the US.
And you're an hour from the beach.
I am.
Yeah, yes. That's not bad at all.
No, I mean, this is a town where, you know, we don't have a movie theater here. There's no shopping malls or anything like that. But we have the necessities. We have a couple of grocery stores. One of them is one of the best ones and most famous ones in Spain. They have a branch here. You know, there's veterinarians. You know, we have our cats. It's a whole other thing. I can help people also with advice about pet travel. Every time I moved to Spain and back, I was doing it with pets. And one time I even had a dog involved, so that made things a little more complicated because the dogs don't fit under the seat in front of you.
Not willingly, so, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, um, yeah, we're here and we're just like enjoying it as much as we can, kind of just trying to live in the moment and hoping the universe just finds a way to work everything out someday. It's,
Yeah, well, I'm
thinking
with
about
you on
going
that.
back to the US, it's just, we didn't even talk about why I came back to Spain this time, but I would say it wasn't politically motivated. It was more economical and lifestyle motivated. We just missed Spain, life in Spain. We missed the friends here. Of course, we miss our friends in Pennsylvania and our family as well. But it just kind of, because we had still our residency card active, it just kind of seemed easier to come back here than starting over again in Pennsylvania. My husband's in like a software engineering field. The job market has been increasingly difficult in that field. We did try a little bit to get jobs in PA, but it was just complicated. So, but to answer your original question about where we see ourselves, we're either going to be here in Spain or we're going to be in Pennsylvania. We liked Arizona, but we didn't feel at home there. It felt more isolated. I didn't like the long flights from Arizona to Europe, to Spain. I'm from the East Coast, so I'm used to going to Newark or Philly and being in Europe in like one flight. We thought if we're going to have to live in the States, we might as well live near our friends and family.
Sure.
Life in Arizona and life in Pennsylvania, it's not that much different. Arizona has 1,000 times better weather. That always have peace in my heart. Phoenix, Scottsdale area, and Arizona in general is beautiful out there, but we just didn't see it as our long-term home. So if we're coming back to the States, it's going to be PA, or we're going to be here in Spain. I don't have any
Well,
desires to go to live, move to Thailand or anything like that.
Your uncle Robbie has a new puppy.
Yes. I met
So
him,
you'll be
actually.
visiting your grandpuppy, right?
Or my, like, he'd be like my cousin, I guess.
Your cousin, yeah, your cousin
Yeah.
puppy. Is there anything else you want to cover before we close? One thing my wife has told me is to let my guests talk more and for me to talk less, and I think that's sage advice.
Yeah, no, we talked about a lot of good stuff. We one thing we didn't get to talk about, and this is just some talking about me, like in my hobby, I've traveled. So although I said I don't want to live in any other country than Spain or Pennsylvania, I've traveled a lot. I hope to do more of that while I'm here. I've been to a total of like 54 different countries and territories. Okay, yes, one of them is the US and Canada. But I'm trying to go for the Travelers Century Club to get to 100 countries and territories, and they try to make it a little easy for you. You can count Puerto Rico and Gibraltar, and that are territories of other countries. So I have experience with that as well. That's mentioned on my website. So I also wanted, if anybody wanted help, like planning a trip somewhere. There's people who don't know, who aren't good at planning, who don't have time to do it. I also was hoping that maybe someday I could get into a little bit of that. But even if not, like just as a personal hobby, I've been to almost all of Europe already. So hopefully someday I can explore Asia, not to live, but just to vacation.
Sure.
So yeah, there's that. And yeah, I mean, if anybody, you'll share my website and that. I'm on social media. We started a YouTube channel. I got very inspired by, I watch a lot of YouTube, so my algorithm knows what I like. I watch a lot of videos about Americans moving to Spain or to France or even like Australians moving to Spain. And so I got inspired by these people to join that and try to maybe monetize YouTube in some way. That would be fantastic. But yeah, you can find me there on Instagram as well. My website.
Okay, if you would be kind enough to shoot me your other links, I'll include those in the show notes as well. And I should say that I did look at your website, and your rates for helping people do different things that you had published on your website
I've
are
actually
quite
taken them down.
affordable.
I
They're
did
quite
take them down.
affordable.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, I'm just starting out, so I'm very, if I could get my name out there and help people, I'm also interested in what I could do some pro bono work as well. I actually took the rates down for now because I technically I'm not really supposed to be working in Spain, but and I got a little paranoid, but yeah. So that's
Well,
why I
the
mentioned,
real rates that aren't on the website are they're affordable. I'm telling you. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jessica, for
Thanks
taking
for having
the time
me.
To visit with me here on the podcast. I'll say hi to Uncle Robbie for you.
Yeah.
And I'll post
don't
the link
forget
to your website in the show notes.
I think you should look into that grandparents' law in Spain. Just saying. Even if you don't want to move to Spain, your kids might want to someday. So if
well,
that's
that
a possibility.
Definitely is, that's a reason to do it because I'm locked in here, unfortunately. I don't really have a choice. But if the kids go, then I can go.
Yeah.
So
I'll send you more information on that as well.
Okay. And I'll say this wrong. I'll say hablamos pronto.
Hablamos.
Hablamos. That's right. Hablamos.
It's where you put the accent.
The accent. Hablamos pronto. And yes. Thank you again, Jessica. Okay.
Thank you so much, Peter.
All right. Yep. And that wraps up another episode of Pete's Pub. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you have any comments about it or suggestions for the podcast, or you'd like to be a guest in the show like Jessica here, you can drop me an email at peter.kemmerer@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook using my real name, and I'm always interested in talking with people who have stories to tell. The theme music for Pete's Pub is Hard Fought Victory by Chris Martin and Jeff Harvey at www.purple-planet.com. Until next time, remember, if you can be a bass player, be one. If you can't, date or marry one. Talk to you soon.